Before we get started, I'd like to apologize for the extended break. I've been moving for the last 2 weeks, and it's consumed my entire life. I have way too much stuff. But I'm all moved in now, and I'm ready to get back at it. Hey there, I'm Austin, and if you've been listening, you know that I love two things. I love history, and I love etymology. So what I do with this podcast is I combine the two of them and tell interesting stories behind words we use every day. But I don't want to tell you what the word is right off the bat. I want the story to reveal the word. If you follow along, you'll probably be able to guess what the word is at some point. But that's part of the fun. This is our 6th episode, so here we go. Today's word is a very common one. It's just the name of a fruit, one you probably consume in some form several times per week or month. But it has a journeyed history, one that spans continents, and involves a linguistic quirk that has formed some of the most common words that we use today. This story takes us all over Asia and Europe, but it starts in China, around 2500 BC, where a small, bitter fruit was cultivated on little bushy trees. The fruit quickly caught on and made its way southward to southern India, and then spread west from there over the next few hundred years. This is where we find the first written account of the fruit and its oldest surviving name, from an ancient Sanskrit medical handbook. The name finds its root in a Dravidian word, which is a very old set of South Indian languages. The Dravidian word for fragrant was naru. As the fruit in question was known to be very fragrant, it picked up the name naranga in Sanskrit. The naranga tree continued its journey westward, eventually finding itself in Persia, where the name evolved to naranja. Here it was picked up by Arabian traders and incorporated into their culture. The Arabians enjoyed the fruit immensely and cultivated it for themselves for many centuries. The name of the naranja tree eventually evolved in Arabic and simply became naranj. It was around this time, near the 9th or 10th century, that Spain and Portugal came under Muslim rule. The peninsula was governed by a group of people who were referred to as the Moors, which is just kind of a loose catch-all term for Muslims in the medieval period. The Moors spread their rule across current-day Portugal and then Spain, even reaching up into France for a time. The area was called Al-Andalus and became one of the greatest centers of knowledge and culture at the time and was awash with enlightenment. The Moors had a mostly stable relationship with the Christians in the area and offered them free worship of their religion and protections from the state in exchange for taxes. It was here in Al-Andalus that some of the greatest exchanges of knowledge and culture between Muslims and Christians took place, including foods and plants being exchanged. When the naranj tree made its way from the hands of the Arabs to the Moors, it was quickly traded with their Christian neighbors to the north. And it's during this time that complex irrigation and cultivation techniques were developed between the two cultures, allowing the naranj tree to explode in popularity. The tree spread deep into Europe and was traded extensively, especially in France. When the fruit entered Europe, the word naranj adopted the quirks of the languages. It fell victim to a linguistic process that occurs over time called rebracketing, or juncture loss. It's an oddity that gives us several common words we use today. The process occurs when the end of one word gets confused over time with the start of another, usually involving an article, such as a and an, which are easily mixed up. The most common form of rebracketing occurs when a word that begins with a vowel has the n from the word an tacked onto it, or vice versa. For example, when anyut, the original word for a small slimy lizard, becomes a newt. So when the word naranj entered English, French, and other languages, it became rebracketed. And when people asked for a naranj, it eventually became an orange, which evolved over time to become an orange. oranges quickly became a luxury item throughout Europe and were held in high regard. The tree that bears oranges does not bode well in cold temperatures, so from the 17th to the 19th century, wealthy families and nobility had enormous rooms, called orangeries, added to their homes that were lined with windows, for the sole purpose of growing orange trees year-round or in colder climates. There are hundreds of beautiful orangeries around Europe, the most famous of which is at the Palace of Versailles. One of the most interesting notes about the word orange is that the color was named after the fruit. Until the introduction of the fruit and its word into English, if you needed to refer to something orange, the word you would use was simply yellow-red. And yes, it is true that the word orange has no true rhyme in English. It's one of a few hundred or so words that do not. Some other intriguing instances of rebracketing occur in the words another, which comes from an other, alone, which comes from all one, an umpire, which originates from the Middle English word a nompire, and apron, which was originally a napron. This week's episode was brought to you by me, and words and letters and fruit. If you enjoyed the show, leaving a review can be super helpful, and I appreciate it tremendously. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and I really hope you'll join us next week for another word and a new story. Thanks for listening.